The drones scuttled and clacked. Automatic weapons fire followed. I had almost reached the exit, but I saw shadows in the sunlight outside. I was getting sick of drones. I winced as I pulled out my handgun. Fortunately, the shadows resolved into a stout black man in tight, dark clothing, night vision goggles on his brow, and a very, very large gun in his hands. Abraham cursed as he saw me, voice softly laced with his French accent.
"How are you?" he said,
hurrying down the short slope.
"And Megan?"
"She's covering our escape," I said. "She wants us to go without her." He met my eyes, then nodded, turning to walk with me the last couple of feet.
"Drones outside pulled back into the complex once you were spotted," he said. "Everyone else is at the jeeps."
We had a chance then.
"She is an epic!"
I jumped, looking around. It was that voice from before. Had a drone found us? No. A panel on the wall had turned into a display. The same shadowed figure as before was on screen, facing us.
"David?"
Abraham said, standing in the sunlight of the open roof of the exit.
"Let's go!"
"She is an epic," I said instead, facing the screen. That figure, was it familiar? A light suddenly switched on, banishing the shadows and revealing a stocky, older man with a round head, bald save for some wisps of white hair that stuck up almost like a crown. I had seen him before, one time, in a picture of Prof's taken years ago.
"I have seen something unbelievable today," the man said, "and it leaves me curious. You're the one they call Steel Slayer, aren't you?" "Yes, the kid from New Cargo. Don't you kill epics?"
"Just the ones that deserve it," I replied.
"And Jonathan Phaedrus?"
"Jonathan Phaedrus is gone," Abraham said softly. "Only the epic Limelight remains. We will do what needs to be done."
I didn't say anything. It wasn't that I disagreed with Abraham, but saying the words was hard for me. The man studied us. Suddenly the gunfire behind us fell silent.
"I have recalled my machines. We need to talk."
In reply, I fainted. 7. We wouldn't have had this problem if you'd been willing to deal with us. Megan's voice. I lay in darkness, enjoying that sound, and was annoyed when the next speaker wasn't her.
"What was I supposed to do?"
It was the voice of that man, the one from Nighthawk.
"First I get word that Phaedrus has turned. Then you immediately contact me and demand weapons? I wanted nothing to do with it."
"You could have guessed that we would resist him," Abraham said. "The Reckoners would not simply join with a tyrant because he was once our leader."
"You're missing my point," the man said. "I didn't turn you away because I thought you were working with him. I turned you away because I'm not a sparking idiot. Phaedrus knows too much about me. I'm not going to cross him or sell to him. I wanted nothing to do with you people."
"Then why did you invite us in here?" Megan demanded. I groaned, forcing my eyes open. My leg ached, but it didn't hurt like I expected it to. When I shifted it, I felt only a superficial pain. But sparks, I was exhausted. I blinked, my eyes struggling to focus, and a moment later Megan's head appeared above me, golden hair hanging down around her face. "David?" she asked. "How do you feel?"
"Like a piece of bread at a rock party."
She relaxed visibly and turned around. "He's all right."
"A piece of what?"
the Nighthawk man's voice asked.
"Piece of bread," I said, sitting up with difficulty. "At a rock party. You know, because nobody wants bread at a rock party. They've come to see the cool rocks. So they toss the bread on the floor and it gets stomped on."
"That's the dumbest thing I've ever heard."
"Sorry," I grumbled. "I'm usually more eloquent after getting shot." I was in a dim room filled with an inordinate number of sofas, one of which I had been lying on. Another one, long, black, overstuffed, near the far wall, had a low table in front of it that was covered with an array of monitors and other computer equipment, as well as a small stack of dirty plates. The Nighthawk man sat on a different sofa closer to me, near a little nightstand piled with peanut shells and two large empty plastic cups. Beside him sat a full-sized mannequin. Like, really, a mannequin, the type you might find in an old department store modeling clothing. It had a completely featureless wooden face and was dressed like the new Kago Elite in a wide-brimmed hat and pinstriped suit. It had been positioned to sit in a relaxed pose, legs crossed and hands clasped. Right. Abraham stood in front of the sofa, arms folded, still in his black infiltration suit. He'd removed his mask, it hung from his belt, but he still wore his imposing P-328 gravitonic minigun strapped to his back. Other than Megan, he was the only member of my team in the room. "Nice place," I said. "I assume you spent your entire decorating budget on the freaky laboratory?" The man sniffed.
"The laboratory needs to remain clean for the work I do there. I have invited you into my home, young man. A rare honor."
"I apologize for not bringing some ceremonial stale pizza crusts as an offering," I said, nodding to the dirty plates on the table across the room. I climbed to my feet, wobbling, although with one hand on the armrest of the couch I managed to remain upright. My leg throbbed, and I looked down to find that my pants had been sliced to get at the wound. It was scabbed over, and looked like it had been healing for weeks, perhaps months. The man said.
"Sorry that it's not completely healed. My device isn't as powerful as some others."
I nodded to Megan, indicating I was all right. She didn't offer me an arm to lean on, not in front of an enemy, but she did remain close by. "Where are we?" I asked.
"Underneath my foundry," the man said.
"And you are?"
"Dean Nighthawk."
I blinked. "Seriously? Like, that's your name?"
"No," the man said. "But my name was stupid, so I used this one instead."
Well, points to him for honesty, though my skin crawled at the idea of giving up your name. I wasn't even fond of the nickname people gave me, Steel Slayer. David Charleston was good enough. My father gave me that name. These days it was about the only thing I had left of him. Nighthawk was indeed the man I'd seen in Prof's photo back in Babylor. The man was older now, more bald and more paunched, with jowls hanging down beside his neck, like melted cheese sloughing off the top of a piece of bread in the microwave. He and Prof had obviously been friends, and he knew that Prof was an epic, had known for a long while. "You were part of Prof's first team," I guessed. "The one with Regalia and Mirkwood, when all of them became epics."
"No," Nighthawk said. "I wasn't, but my wife was."
"That's right. There had been four of them," I remembered Prof saying. "A woman named... Amala? There was something important about her, something I couldn't quite remember."
"I was an interested observer," Nighthawk said. "A scientist, and not the, 'Hey, kids, watch me freeze this grape with liquid nitrogen' type like Jonathan. A real scientist."
"And a real businessman," Abraham said. "You've built an empire upon the bodies of the dead."
Beside Nighthawk, the mannequin spread its arms apart, hands to the sides as if to say, "Guilty as charged." I jumped, then glanced at Megan. "Yeah," she whispered. "It moves. Haven't figured out how." "Mizzy and Cody?" I whispered. Stayed outside in case this was a trap.
"I pioneered motivator technology," Nighthawk said to Abraham. "And yes, I have benefited from it. So have you. So let us not point fingers, Mr. Desjardins."
Abraham maintained a calm expression, but he couldn't have been happy to hear Nighthawk use his last name. Even I hadn't known what it was. We didn't talk much about our pasts. "That's great," I said, then walked by Abraham and flopped down onto the couch opposite Nighthawk and his creepy mannequin.
Again, why did you invite us in here?
That epic,
Nighthawk said, and his mannequin pointed at Megan.
Is Firefight, isn't she? She was a dimensionalist all along.
It wasn't exactly true. When Megan spoke of Firefight, she spoke of him externally, a being from another dimension who she could bring into ours, fleetingly. She didn't consider herself to be Firefight, though that was a small distinction.
Yes,
Megan said, stepping up and, after considering for a moment, sitting down next to me. She rested her arm along the back of the couch, exposing her underarm holster and making it easily accessible.
There's more to it, but basically, yes, I am what you say.
I rested my hand on her shoulder. Megan could be cold. Part was her native personality, part was wanting to keep her distance from people because, well, epics tended to be dangerous to get to know. I could see past that to the tension in the way she watched Nighthawk, the way she wiggled her thumb as if cocking an imaginary revolver. Her hand had a big red blister on it where she'd grabbed the flame. We knew how to keep the darkness at bay. But this war wasn't won yet. She was worried about what had happened to her earlier. Frankly, so was I. Nighthawk's mannequin leaned forward in a thoughtful posture and tipped its hat back to better expose its featureless face.
What you did in the lab, young woman, Nighthawk said, fooled all of my sensors, cameras, and programming. You aren't just any dimensionalist. You're a powerful one. My robots report scarring on the walls of the room, and some of my drones were destroyed. Permanently. It's like nothing I've ever seen.
You're not getting my DNA, Megan said.
Hmm?
Nighthawk said.
Oh, I already have that. I collected a dozen different samples before you two made it to the access corridor. You think you could come in here wearing anything other than a clean room suit and escape without me getting some of your skin cells? But you needn't worry. I'm far from creating a motivator based on you. There is more to it than is generally assumed.
The mannequin continued to gesture while Nighthawk talked. But Nighthawk's not moving at all, I noticed, and the overstuffed couches and pillows make it seem like he's wedged into his seat. Dean Nighthawk was at least partially paralyzed. He could talk. Every word he spoke came from his own mouth. But he didn't move anything more than his head. How could he be disabled? If he had technology to heal me, then why wouldn't he have healed himself?
No, Nighthawk said, still addressing Megan. I'm not interested in exploiting your powers right now, but I do want to understand them. What you did earlier was powerful. Incredible. The manipulation of reality is no small-scale stuff, young lady.
I hadn't realized, she said dryly. What are you getting at?
You were going to sacrifice yourself, Nighthawk said. You stayed behind so the others could escape.
Yeah, Megan said. It's not a big deal. I can survive a lot of things.
Ah, so a high epic?
Nighthawk said. His mannequin sitting up straighter.
I might have guessed as much.
Megan drew her lips to a line.
Get to the point, Nighthawk, I said.
The point is this,
he replied, his mannequin waving to us.
This conversation. Such an explosive use of that woman's powers should have driven her to isolation, rage, and a supreme annoyance at anyone near to her. Jonathan is one of the few epics I know who could control the darkness, and following the use of his powers, he would often stay away from people for days before he was under control again. Yet this young lady used her powers, but wasn't consumed by darkness at all, as proven by the fact that she subsequently selflessly risked her life for her team.
The mannequin leaned forward.
So,
Nighthawk continued,
what's the secret?
I looked toward Abraham, who shrugged almost imperceptibly. He didn't know if we should share the information or not. So far, we had been careful about when and with whom we talked about how to drive back the darkness in epics. With this knowledge, we could accidentally tip the power structure in the fractured states, as the secret of overcoming the darkness also gave away the secret to discovering epic weaknesses. I had half a mind to broadcast these things far and wide. If the epics discovered one another's weaknesses, maybe they'd kill each other off. Unfortunately, the truth would probably be more brutal. Power would shift, and some epics would rise while others fell. We might end up with one group of epics ruling the entire continent and be forced to deal with an organized, powerful regime instead of a network of city-states fighting one another and remaining weak because of it. We'd want to let this knowledge out sooner or later, spread it to the lorists of the world, and see if they could start turning epics from the darkness. But first we needed to test what we'd discovered and find out if we could even make it work on other epics. I had big plans, plans to change the world, and they all started with one trap, one important hit, perhaps the hardest ever pulled by the Reckoners. "I'll tell you the secret to turning epics away from their madness, Nighthawk," I decided. "But I want you to promise to keep it quiet for now, and I want you to equip us, give us what we need."
"You're going to bring him down, aren't you?" Nighthawk said. "Jonathan Phaedrus, Limelight as they call him now. You're going to kill Prof."
"No," I said softly, meeting his eyes. "We're going to do something far, far more difficult. We're going to bring him back." 8. Nighthawk had the mannequin carry him. I got a better look at the thing, walking beside it. It wasn't your average everyday store mannequin. It had articulated wooden fingers and a more solid body than I had expected. It was really more of a large marionette, only without the strings. And it was strong. It carried Nighthawk with ease, sliding its arms through straps in some kind of harness Nighthawk wore. The whole arrangement made the mannequin look like it was hugging him from behind, its arms across his stomach and chest, with Nighthawk remaining upright and strapped in place, his feet dangling a few inches off the ground. It didn't look comfortable or normal. Still, Nighthawk chatted conversationally while we walked, as if it were perfectly natural for a quadriplegic to be carted around by a tall wooden golem. "So that's basically it," I said to him, as we made our way down the nondescript corridor, heading toward Nighthawk's armory. "The weaknesses are tied to fears. If an epic confronts the fear, banishes it, then they can drive back the darkness." "Mostly," Megan said from behind us. Abraham had gone up above to fetch Mizzy and Cody, as we'd decided that, one way or another, we were going to have to trust Nighthawk. We didn't have any other option. Nighthawk grunted.
"Fear seems so simple."
"Yes and no," I said. "I don't think a lot of epics consumed by their powers like to think about being weak. They don't confront these things. That's basically the problem."
"I still wonder why no one else has made the connection," Nighthawk said, sounding skeptical.
"We've made it," Megan said softly. "Every epic thinks about this, I guarantee it. It's just that we think about it all the wrong way. We connect fears and our weakness, but we connect them in reverse of the truth. It's the nightmares. They're maddening. They drive you from your bed, gasping, sweating, and smelling blood. The nightmares are about your weakness, the loss of power, the return to mortality, the return to being crassly common, so a simple accident could end you. It makes sense that we'd be afraid of the thing that could kill us, so the nightmares seem normal in a way. But we never realized that weaknesses grew out of our fears. The fears came first, and then the weaknesses, not the other way around." Nighthawk and I both stopped in the hallway, looking back at her. Megan met our gaze, defiant as ever, but I could see the cracks. Sparks. The things this woman had been forced to live with. What we'd discovered was helping her, but in some ways it was also prying those cracks wider, exposing things inside her that she'd worked hard to cover up. She'd done terrible things in the past, serving Steelheart. We didn't talk about it, She'd escaped that by being forced to not use her powers while infiltrating the Reckoners.
"We can do this, Nighthawk," I said. "We can discover Prof's weakness, then use it against him. Only instead of killing him, we'll lay a trap that makes him confront his fears. We'll bring him back and prove that there's another solution to the Epic problem."
"It won't work," Nighthawk said. "He knows you, and he knows Reckoner Protocol. Calamity, he wrote Reckoner Protocol. He'll be ready for you."
"See, that's the thing," I said. "He knows us, yes, but we also know him. We'll be able to figure out his weakness far more easily than with other epics. And beyond that, we know something important."
"Which is?"
he demanded. "Deep down," I said, "Prof wants us to win. He'll be ready to die, so he'll be surprised when what we actually do is save him." Nighthawk regarded me.
"You have a strangely persuasive way about you, young man."
"You have no idea," Megan muttered. "We're going to need technology to beat him, though," I said. "So I'm eager to see what you have."
"Well, I've got a few things I could lend you," Nighthawk said, starting down the corridor again. "But contrary to what people assume, this place isn't some kind of massive repository for hidden technology. Pretty much every time I get something working, I immediately sell it. All those drones aren't cheap, you know. I have to order them out of Germany, and they're a pain to unpack. Speaking of which, I'm going to bill you for the ones you destroyed."
"We're here begging, Nighthawk," they said, catching up to him. "How do you expect us to pay you?"
"By all accounts, you're a resourceful kid. You'll think of something. A frozen blood sample from Jonathan will do. Assuming your crazy plan fails and you end up having to kill him."
"It won't fail."
"Yeah? Taking a look at the history of the Reckoners, I'd never bet money on the plan that doesn't intend to leave some bodies behind. But we'll see."
His mannequin nodded toward Megan. That mannequin, something about it struck me. I thought for a moment. And then it clicked in my mind like the mandibles of a giant poker-playing beetle. "The wooden soul," I said. "You got some of her DNA?" Nighthawk twisted his head to look at me as we walked.
"How in the world?"
"Pretty easy connection, once I thought about it. There aren't many puppeteer epics out there."
"She lived in a remote Punjabi village," Nighthawk said, "and has been dead for almost 10 years.
"David's got a thing about epics," Megan said from behind.
"I'd call him obsessed, but that doesn't do it justice."
"It's not that," I said. "I'm like,
"No,"
Nighthawk said. "This makes sense. I am like..."
"No, really,"
Nighthawk interrupted.
"Nobody wants to hear it, kid."
I deflated. On the floor, a little cleaning drone zipped up. It bumped into my foot in what seemed like a vindictive motion, then scuttled away. Nighthawk's mannequin pointed at me, though it had to turn sideways to do it as its arms were strapped into carrying Nighthawk, its hands peeking out the sides.
"Obsession with the epics isn't healthy. You need to watch yourself."
Ironic words coming from a man who has built his career by making use of epic powers and is using them right now to get around.
"And what makes you think I don't have the same obsession? Let's just say I speak from experience. Epics are strange, wonderful, and terrible all at once. Don't let yourself get drawn in by that. It can lead you to difficult places."
Something in his voice made me think of the laboratory with the body parts floating so casually in vats. This man wasn't quite sane.
"I'll keep that in mind," I said.
Together we continued down the corridor, passing an open doorway which I couldn't help peeking into. The small room beyond was strikingly clean, with a large metal box in the center. It looked kind of like a coffin, an impression not helped by the room's dim lighting and sterile, cold smell. Past the coffin stood a large wooden display case shaped like a bookshelf with large cubbies. Each held some small item, many of which seemed to be clothing. Caps, shirts, little boxes. The cubbies were labeled,
and I could barely make out a few. Demo, The Abstract Man, Blastweave. The names of epics. Perhaps those freezer chests were where Nighthawk kept his DNA samples, but this was where he kept his trophies. Curiously, one of the largest cubbies had no plaque, only a vest and what looked like a pair of gloves, set out prominently for display with their own spotlight.
"You won't find motivators in there," Nighthawk noted. "Just mementos."
"And how would I find motivators?" I asked, looking to Nighthawk. "What are they really, Nighthawk?" Nighthawk smiled.
"You have no idea how hard it has been to keep people from figuring out the answer to that, kid. Trick is, I need people out there to collect material for me, but I don't want Joe and Sally knowing how to make their own motivators. That means misinformation. Half-truths."
"You aren't the only one who makes these things, Nighthawk," Megan said, stepping up beside us. "Romero Corp does it, as does ITC over in London. It's not some grand secret."
"Oh, but it is," Nighthawk said. "The other companies know how important it is to keep that secret, you see. I don't think even Jonathan knows the whole truth of it."
He smiled as he hung limply from his mannequin's arms. I was getting tired of that smirk already. The mannequin turned and headed down the hall toward another door. "Wait," I said, hurrying after him. "We're not going in that room with the mementos?"
"Nope," Nighthawk said. "No food in there."
His mannequin pushed open this second door, and I could see a stove and refrigerator beyond, though the linoleum floor and slab-like table in the center made it feel more like the cafeteria back at the factory than a kitchen. I glanced at Megan as she joined me in the hallway, right outside the door. The mannequin went inside and deposited Nighthawk into an overstuffed easy chair beside a table. Then it crossed to the refrigerator, rummaging for something I couldn't see. "I could do with a bite," she noted. "Doesn't all this feel a little morbid to you?" I asked softly. "We're talking about machines made from the corpses of your people, Megan. It's not like I'm a different species. I'm still human." "You have different DNA, though." "And I'm still human. Don't try to understand it. It will drive you crazy." It was a common sentiment. Trying to explain epics with science was maddening at best. When America had passed the Capitulation Act, which declared epics exempt from the legal system, one senator had explained that we shouldn't expect human laws to be able to bind them when they didn't even obey the laws of physics. But call me a fool, I still wanted to understand. I needed it to make sense. I looked at Megan. "I don't care what you are, as long as you're you, Megan. But I don't like the way we use corpses without understanding what we're doing to them, or how it all works."
"Then we'll pry it out of him,"
she whispered, drawing close.
"You're right. Motivators might be important. What if the way they work is related to the weaknesses or the fears?"
I nodded. More sounds from the kitchen. "Popcorn?" I looked in, surprised to see Nighthawk relaxing in his easy chair while his mannequin stood next to the microwave popping popcorn. "Popcorn?" I called to him. "For breakfast?"
"The apocalypse hit us over a decade ago, kid," he called back. "We live in a frontier, a wasteland."
"And that has to do with this how?"
"Means social mores are dead and buried," he said. "Good riddance. I'll eat whatever I sparking want for breakfast."
I went to go in, but Megan caught me by the shoulder, leaning closer. She smelled like smoke, like detonated ordnance, gunpowder from spent bullet casings, and burning wood from a forest set aflame. It was a wonderful, heady scent, better than any perfume.
"What was it you were going to say earlier?" she asked. "When you were talking about yourself, and Nighthawk cut you off, wouldn't let you finish."
"It was nothing. Just me being stupid." Megan held on, meeting my eyes, waiting. I sighed. "You were talking about how obsessed I am, and that's not it. I'm like... well,
I'm like a room-sized, steam-powered, robotic toenail-clipping machine.
She cocked an eyebrow.
I can basically do only one thing, I explained. But damn it, I'm going to do that one thing really, really well.
Megan smiled, a beautiful sight. She kissed me then, for some reason.
I love you, David Charleston.
I grinned. You sure you can love a giant robotic toenail clipper?
You are you, whatever you are, she said. And that's what matters.
She paused.
But please don't grow to room-sized. That would be awkward.
She let go, and we entered the kitchen to discuss the fate of the world over popcorn. 9. We settled down at the large table. It had a fancy glass top that revealed black slate underneath. There was a majestic sense to it, which seemed completely at odds with the peeling linoleum and faded paint of the kitchen. Nighthawk's mannequin sat primly on a stool next to the man's large chair, and began to feed him pieces of popcorn one at a time. I had no more than fuzzy knowledge of the wooden soul, the epic from whom he'd stolen powers to create such a servant. Supposedly, she'd been able to control marionettes with her mind, which meant this thing in the suit wasn't autonomous. It was more like an extra set of limbs for Nighthawk to use. Likely, he wore some kind of device with a motivator that gave him the ability to control the mannequin. Voices outside the room announced new arrivals. A little drone scuttled in on the floor. Nighthawk had sent it to lead Abraham, and perhaps to keep him from poking into places he didn't belong. Soon afterward, the tall Canadian man entered and nodded to us. The other two members of my team followed him. Cody appeared first, a lanky man in his late 30s. He wore a camouflage hunting jacket and cap, though not specifically for this mission. He basically always wore camo. He hadn't shaved in days, which he'd explained was a true Highlander tradition used to prepare for battle.
"Is that popcorn?"
he asked in his strong southern drawl. He walked over and snatched a handful from the bowl right out of the mannequin's hand.
"Brilliant! Boy, Abraham, you weren't kidding about the creepy wooden robot thing."
Mizzy bounced in behind him. Dark-skinned and slight of build, she wore her wild curly hair pulled back so that it exploded in an enormous puff, kind of like an afro mushroom cloud. She took a place at the table as far from Megan as possible and shot me an encouraging smile. I tried not to think of the missing team members. Val and XL, dead at Prof's hand. Tia, lost somewhere, probably dead as well. Though we were usually silent about such things, Abraham had confided in me that he'd known of two other Reckoner cells. He'd tried to contact them while fleeing New Cago, but he'd had no response. It seemed Prof had gotten to them first. Cody crunched down his handful of popcorn.
"How does a fellow score some more of this? Don't know if y'all realize, but we've had an exhausting day."
"Yes," Nighthawk said. "An exhausting morning spent attacking my home and trying to rob me."
"Now, now," Cody said. "Don't be sore. Why, in parts of the old country, it's considered polite to introduce yourself with a fist to the face. Yes, indeed, a man won't think you're serious unless you come in swinging."
"Dare I ask," Nighthawk said, "of what old country do you speak?"
"He thinks he's Scottish," Abraham said.
"I am Scottish, you big slab of doubt and monotony,"
Cody said, climbing from his chair, apparently determined to fix his own popcorn since nobody had offered to do it for him.
"Name one city in Scotland," Abraham said, "other than Edinburgh."
"Ah, yes, the Burg of Eden," Cody said, "where they buried old Adam and Eve, who were, naturally, Scots."
"Naturally," Abraham said. "A city name, please?"
"That's easy. I can name a ton. London, Paris, Dublin."
"Those
are completely Scottish," Cody said. "We founded them, you see, and then those other folks up and stole them from us. Y'all need to learn your history."
"Want some popcorn?"
"No, thank you,"
Abraham said, giving me a bemused smile. I leaned toward Nighthawk.
You promised us technology.
Promised is a strong word, kid.
I want that healing device, Abraham said.
The harm's way? Not a chance. I don't have a backup.
You call it that too? Megan asked, frowning.
One of Jonathan's old jokes,
Nighthawk said, his mannequin shrugging.
It just stuck. Anyway, mine isn't nearly as efficient as Jonathan's own healing powers. It's all I got, though, and you aren't taking it. But I have two other bits of fun I can lend you. One...
Wait, Mizzy said. You've got a healing machine? And you still walk around with Smiles McCreepy there? Why not, you know, fix your legs?
Nighthawk gave her a flat stare, and his mannequin shook its head, as if asking about his disability broke some kind of taboo.
How much do you know about epic healing, young lady?
He asked.
Well, Mizzy said, the epics we kill tend to stay pretty dead, so I don't get to see healing often.
Epic healing, Nighthawk said, doesn't change your DNA or your immune system. It merely fixes damage to cells. My current state is not the result of an accident. If it were no more than a severed spinal cord, I'd be fine. The problem runs far deeper, and while I've found that healing returns some sensation in my limbs, they soon degrade again. So I use Manny instead.
You, named it? Abraham asked.
Sure, why not? Look, I'm starting to think you don't want me to give you this tech after all.
We do, I said. Please, continue.
He rolled his eyes, then accepted another piece of popcorn from his marionette's hand.
So, a few months back, an epic died in Siberia. A squabble between two despots, kind of dramatic. An enterprising merchant was in the area and managed to harvest one of the...
Urtich? I said, perking up. You managed to emulate Urtich?
Kid, you know far too much about all this for your own good.
I ignored the comment. Urtich, pronounced something like Urtich, had been a powerful epic. I'd been looking for something that would let us go toe-to-toe with Prof. We needed an edge, something he wouldn't expect.
Megan elbowed me in the stomach.
Well, gonna share?
Oh, I said, noticing that Nighthawk had stopped his explanation.
Well, Urtich was a Russian epic with a very eclectic set of abilities. She wasn't technically a high epic, but she was very powerful. Are we talking about her entire portfolio, Nighthawk?
Each motivator can only provide one ability, he said.
Well, I said, standing, then I assume in this case you emulated her Quicksilver Globe. Why are we sitting here? Let's go get it! I want to try it out!
Hey, Scotsman, Nighthawk said, will you get me a cola out of the fridge while you're up?
Sure,
Cody said, pouring a fresh batch of popcorn into a bowl. He reached over and fished a cola from the fridge. The same brand that Tia had liked.
Oh,
Nighthawk added.
And that bin of potato salad.
Potato salad and popcorn? Cody asked. You're a weird dude, if you don't mind me saying.
He walked over and slid the translucent bin across the table, cola on top. Then he plopped down beside Mizzy and put his feet, work boots, up on the table, leaning back in his chair and attacking his bowl of food like a man whose house had once been burned down by a particularly violent ear of corn. I remained standing, hoping everyone else would join me. I didn't want to sit around and talk about epic powers. I wanted to use them. And this specific ability should prove to be as exciting as the spiral, but without the water, which I was totally up for. I might have been willing to let the depths consume me in order to save my friends, but that didn't mean water and I liked one another. We had more of a truce.
Well, I urged.
Nighthawk's mannequin popped open the bin of potato salad. There, sitting in the middle of the stuff, was a little black box.
It's right here.
You keep your priceless superpower devices, Megan said flatly. In the potato salad.
Do you know how many times people have broken in to rob me?
Nighthawk asked.
Never successfully, I said. Everyone knows this place is impregnable.
Nighthawk snorted.
Kid, we live in a world where people can literally walk through walls. No place is impregnable. I'm just good at telling lies. I mean, even you people managed to snitch a few things from me. Though you'll find that the ones Abraham grabbed are mostly useless. One creates the sound of a dog barking, and another makes fingernails grow faster, but not any stronger. Not every epic power is amazing, though I'd like those two back anyway. They make good decoys.
Decoys? Abraham asked, surprised.
Sure, sure, Nighthawk said. Always gotta leave a few things out so people feel like they're grabbing something useful for their efforts. I have this whole routine, furious they've robbed me, swearing to get vengeance. Blah, blah. Usually makes them leave me alone, happy to have gotten what they did. Anyway, across dozens of break-ins, you want to guess how many people thought to look in the potato salad bin?
His mannequin dug the little box out and set it on the table. He'd packed it in a watertight bag, at least, and I sat back down to admire it, imagining the possibilities.
How do you get the fairies inside something that small? Cody asked, pointing at the device. Doesn't it crush their wee wings?
We all pointedly ignored him.
You mentioned another piece of technology, Abraham said.
Yeah,
Nighthawk said.
I've got an old crystal grower lying around here somewhere. Attach it to a pure crystal lattice, and you can grow new formations in seconds. That might be handy.
Mizzy said, raising her hand. Anyone else confused as to why, exactly, we'd want something like that? Sounds cool and all, but... crystals?
Well, you see, Nighthawk said, salt is a crystal.
We all looked at him, stupefied.
You are going to chase down Jonathan, right? Nighthawk said. And you're aware he's in Atlanta?
Atlanta? I settled back into my seat. Atlanta would be under the jurisdiction of the Coven, a loose affiliation of epics who had basically promised not to bother one another. Occasionally one would help another murder a rival who tried to steal their city, which for epics was practically like being best buddies. But for all I knew of epics, my knowledge of the world was spotty. The nature of Babalar, with its glowing fruit and surreal paints, had taken me completely by surprise. I was still, at my core, a sheltered kid who'd never left his home neighborhood before a few months ago.
Atlanta, Abraham said softly. Or what is now Ildithia. Where is it currently?
Somewhere in eastern Kansas, Nighthawk said.
Kansas, I thought, the comment jarring my memory. That's right. Ildithia moves. But so far? I'd read about it moving, but had assumed it stayed in the same general region.
Why is it there, though? Abraham asked. What is there for Jonathan Phaedrus in the City of Salt?
How should I know? Nighthawk said. I'm doing my best to avoid drawing the man's attention. I watched where he went for self-preservation's sake, but there's no way in calamity that I'm going to start poking him with a stick.
Nighthawk's mannequin set down the bowl.
I'm out of popcorn, which means it's time to attach some strings to this little gift of mine. You can take the Earth Peach and the Crystal Grower on the condition that you get out of here now and you don't contact me anymore. Don't mention me to Jonathan. Don't even talk about me to one another, in case he overhears. He likes things done right. If he comes here for me, he'll leave a smoldering hole and not much else.
I looked toward Megan, who was staring at Nighthawk, unblinking, lips downturned.
You know we have the secret, she said softly to him. You know we're close to answers. A real solution.
Which is why I'm helping you in the first place.
Halfway, Megan accused him. You're willing to toss a grenade into the room, but you don't want to look and see if it did the job or not. You know that something needs to change in this world, but you don't want to have to change with it. You're lazy.
I'm a realist,
Nighthawk said, his mannequin standing up.
I take the world as it is, and do what I can to survive in it, Even giving you these two devices will be dangerous for me. Jonathan will recognize my handiwork. Hopefully he'll think you got them off an arms dealer.
The mannequin walked to the fridge and removed a few other items, dropping some in a sack. He set one on the table for us. It looked like a tub of mayonnaise, but when he pried off the top, inside was another small device settled into the gooey condiment. The mannequin slung the sack by a strap over its arm, then walked over to lift Nighthawk from behind.
"I have other questions," I said, rising.
"Too bad," Nighthawk said.
"You have other technology you could give us," Abraham said, pointing at the sack. "The ones you've given us are only what you think won't get you in too much trouble with Prof."
"Good guess, and you're right," Nighthawk replied. "Get out. I'll send a bill with a drone. If you survive, I expect it to be paid."
"We're trying to save the world, you know," Mizzy said. "That includes you."
Nighthawk snorted.
"You realize that half the people who come to me are trying to save the world? Hell, I've worked with the Reckoners before, and you're always trying to save the world. Looks pretty unsaved to me so far. In fact, looks a fair bit worse now that Jonathan has flipped. If I'd given you things for free all along, I'd have gone bankrupt years ago, and you wouldn't even have had the option of coming to try to rob me. So don't climb up on a high horse and spit platitudes at me."
And then the mannequin turned and walked out. I stood at my chair, feeling frustrated, and looked back at the others.
"Did that exit feel abrupt to any of you?"
"Did you miss the part about him being a really weird dude?" Cody asked, nudging the potato salad bin with his foot.
"At least we got something," Abraham said, turning one of the small boxes over in his hands. "This puts us in a far better position than where we began. And beyond that, we know where Jonathan has set up base."
"Yeah," I said, glancing at Megan, who seemed troubled. So she felt it too. We'd gotten some weapons, sure, but we'd missed an opportunity for answers.
"Grab that stuff," I said. "Cody, search the fridge just in case. Then let's get out of here."
The group moved to do as instructed, and I found myself staring out the door and into the hallway. There were still too many questions.
"So," Megan said, joining me, "you want me to guide the rest of the team out?"
"Hmm?" I asked.
"Remember how you chased Prof and us into the understreets of New Cago, after expressly being told you'd be shot if you didn't stay put?"
I smiled.
"Yeah. Back then I figured getting shot by the Reckoners would be so cool. Think about showing off a bullet scar to your friends and saying that Jonathan Phaedrus himself shot you."
"You're such a nerd. My point is, are you going after Nighthawk?"
"Of course I'm going after him," I said. "Make sure everyone gets out safely. Then try to save me from my stupidity if this goes sour."
I gave her a swift kiss, caught my rifle as Abraham tossed it to me, then went to chase down Nighthawk. 10. I didn't have to search far. The hallway was empty, but I stepped up to the room we'd passed earlier, the one with the trophies on the back wall, and peeked in. I was unsurprised to find Nighthawk sitting in an easy chair on the far side of the room. A gas fireplace crackled beside him, and his mannequin lay, its invisible strings cut, on the ground beside it. At first that worried me. Was Nighthawk all right? Then I saw his eyes, reflecting the writhing flames, staring at the silvery box in the center of the room, the one that looked like a coffin. As a tear rolled down Nighthawk's cheek, I realized the man had probably wanted to be alone, without even the mannequin's silent gaze upon him.
"Prof killed her, didn't he?" I whispered.
"Your wife.
She went evil and Prof had to kill her."
I finally remembered the details of a conversation I'd had with Prof weeks ago, right outside Babalar in a little bunker where he'd been doing science experiments. He told me about his team of friends, epics every one. Him, Regalia, Mirkwood, and Amala. Over time, three of them had eventually gone evil. Sparks. Four of them, when you included Prof.
It doesn't work, David, he'd said. It's destroying me.
You don't listen to instructions very well, do you, boy?
Nighthawk asked. I slipped into the room and walked to the coffin. Part of the lid was translucent, and I could see a pretty face lying peacefully inside, golden hair fanned out behind.
She tried so hard to resist it, Nighthawk said. Then one morning I got up and she was gone. She'd been awake all night, judging by the 6 empty cups of coffee she'd left. She'd been afraid to sleep.
Nightmares, I whispered, resting my fingers on the glass of the coffin.
I think the stress of being up all night snapped her. My dear Amala, Jonathan did us both a favor in hunting her down. I must see it that way. Like you should discard this foolish notion you have of saving him. End him, kid, for his own good, and for all of us.
I looked up from the coffin toward Nighthawk. He hadn't wiped away that tear. He couldn't. You have hope, I said. Otherwise you wouldn't have invited us in. You saw the way Megan was acting, and your first thought was that we'd found some way to beat the darkness.
Maybe I invited you in out of pity, Nighthawk said. Pity for someone who obviously loves an epic. Like I did. Like Tia did. Maybe I invited you in to give you a warning. Be ready for it, kid. One morning you'll get up and she'll just be gone.
I crossed the room, rifle over my shoulder, and reached for Nighthawk. I wasn't prepared for how quickly his mannequin could move. It leaped to its feet, catching me by the arm before I rested my hand on Nighthawk's shoulder. His eyes flickered to my hand, apparently deciding I hadn't intended to harm him, and the mannequin released me. Sparks, its grip was strong. That let my hand fall on his shoulder, and I squatted down before his chair. I'm going to beat this, Nighthawk. But I need answers only you can give me. About motivators and how they work.
Foolishness, he said.
You kept Amala in stasis. Why?
Because I'm foolish, too. She had a hole the size of Jonathan's fist in her chest when I found her. Dead. Pretending otherwise is stupid.
Yet you healed her body, I said. And preserved her.
You see those?
He said, nodding to the far side of the room, to the remnants from fallen epics.
Those powers didn't bring her back. Each is from an epic with healing powers that I made a motivator out of. None worked. There is no answer. There is no secret. We live with the world as it is.
Calamity is an epic, I whispered. Nighthawk started. Then tore his eyes away from the wall, focusing on me again.
What?
Calamity, I repeated. Is an epic. A person. Regalia discovered the truth, even talked to him or her. This thing that destroyed our lives, it's not a force of nature. Not a star or a comet. It's a person. I took a deep breath. And I'm going to kill Calamity.
Holy hell, kid,
Nighthawk said. Saving Prof is step one, I said. We're going to need his abilities to pull this off. But after that, I'm going to get up there, and I'm going to destroy that thing. We'll return the world to the way it was before Calamity rose.
You're absolutely insane.
Well, I spent some time drifting after killing Steelheart, I said. I needed a new purpose in life. Figure I might as well aim high. Nighthawk stared at me, then kicked his head back and laughed loudly.
I never thought I'd meet someone with more ambition than Jonathan, kid. Kill Calamity.
Why not? Sounds simple.
I looked toward the mannequin. It had grabbed its belly and was rocking back and forth, as if it were laughing. So, I said, you going to help me?
What do you know about epics who were born as identical twins?
Nighthawk asked as the mannequin reached over and wiped the man's cheeks. Tears of laughter had joined the one he'd shed for his wife. There's only one set, as far as I know. The Creer boys, Hanya and the Mad Pen, in the Coven. They've been active lately in Charleston, isn't it?
Good, good, Nighthawk replied. You do know your stuff. You want a seat? You look uncomfortable.
The mannequin pulled over a stool for me and I sat.
Those two go all the way back, Nighthawk explained, to about a year after Calamity, around the time that Prof and the others got their powers. First wave, you lorists call it. And they're what started some of us thinking about how the powers worked. They have
the exact same power set, I said. Air pressure control, pain manipulation, precognition.
Yup, Nighthawk said. And you know what? They aren't the only pair of twin epics. They're merely the only pair where one didn't kill the other.
That's not possible, I said. I'd have known about them.
Yeah, well, my associates and I made sure nobody heard of the others, because in them was a secret.
Each set of twins had the same abilities, I guessed. Twins share a power set. Nighthawk nodded. So it is genetic somehow.
Yes and no, Nighthawk said. We can't find anything genetic about epics that gives clues to their powers. That mumbo-jumbo about mitochondria? We made it up. Seemed plausible, since epic DNA tends to degrade quickly. Everything else you've heard about motivators is techno-babble we use to confuse those who might be trying to figure out how to compete with us.
Then how?
You realize that by telling you, I'd be breaking an agreement I have with the other companies.
Which I appreciate. He cocked an eyebrow at me, and his mannequin folded its arms. If there's even the slightest chance that I'm right, I said, and I can stop the epics forever. Isn't it worth the risk?
Yes, Nighthawk said. But I still want a promise out of you, kid. You don't share this secret.
It's wrong of you to keep it, I said. Perhaps if the governments of the world had possessed this knowledge, they'd have been able to fight back against the epics.
Too late,
he said.
Your word.
I shook my head. Fine. I'll tell my team, but I'll swear them to secrecy, too. We won't tell anyone else. He thought about that for a moment, then sighed.
Cell cultures.
Cell what?
Cell cultures, he said. You know, when you take a sample of cells and keep them growing in a lab? That's the answer. Grab an epic's cells, stick them in a test tube with some nutrients, and run power through them. Boom. You can emulate that epic's powers.
You're kidding, I said.
Nope.
It can't be that easy.
It's not easy at all, Nighthawk said. The voltage of the electricity determines which power you get out. You have to be ready to channel it properly, or you could blow yourself, hell, the entire state, to the moon. Most of our experimentation, all of this equipment, is based on harnessing the abilities that come off the cells.
Huh, I said. So you're saying that Calamity can't distinguish between an actual person and a pile of cells? That was a strange mistake for an intelligent being to make.
Eh,
Nighthawk said.
More like they just don't care. If Calamity is an epic, I mean. Besides, maybe there's some kind of interaction with motivators we don't understand. Truth is, those things can be touchy, even in the best of cases. Once in a while, the power simply won't work for someone. Everyone else can use it fine. But one person can't operate the device.
It happens more often to epics. Jonathan proved that epics could use motivators, but occasionally we'd run into one that he couldn't operate. Same goes for two different motivators being used by the same person. Sometimes they interfere and one craps out.
I sat back on the stool, thoughtful. Cell cultures, huh? Makes sense, I suppose, but it seems so simple.
The best secrets usually are, he said. But it's simple only in retrospect. Do you know how long it took scientists in pre-calamity days to figure out how to make cultures of normal human cells? It was a strikingly difficult process. Well, same with motivators. We slaved to create the first ones. What you call a motivator is really a little incubator. The motivator feeds the cells, regulates temperature, expels waste. A good motivator will last decades, if built right.
Regalia knew your secret, I said. She took obliteration and used his cells to create a bomb. Nighthawk was silent. When I looked at him, his mannequin had settled against the wall, hands behind its back, head down as if uncertain. What? I asked.
Making motivators from epics who are still alive is dangerous.
For the epic?
Sparks, no, for you. They can feel it when their powers are used by someone else. It's terribly painful, and they get a sense for where it's happening. Naturally, they seek out the source of the pain and destroy it.
That's where the twins come in, I said. You said...
One almost always kills the other.